And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
How's it going, everybody? Monday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. We're previewing round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs after a bunch of game sevens over the weekend. Really memorable slates, right, Nick? Especially what went on with the Lightning staying alive and the Toronto Maple Leafs blowing a big opportunity to finally advance.
Pete, I'm feeling hashtag blessed on this Monday. What a weekend of playoff hockey. We got multiple OTs and game sevens. You can't ask for much more. And I just thought it was tremendous. And I can't wait for round two. I told you guys off the air, I went 8-for-8 with my picks, but we have a guest today. Nice. He went 7-for-8. He had Los Angeles, and Bobby hates it when we pat each other on the back, but that's what we do on this podcast. So we're happy to bring in the one and only from SiriusXM NHL Network Radio. It's Jay Conn, my man. What's going on?
Yeah, thanks for the nice tape-to-tape pass there, Nick. So close. Ooh. I had Kings in seven. It was really feeling like it was going to be the 8-for-8, but you got to take some upsets. Obviously, the Oilers well-deserving in that game seven. I thought they saved their best game for last, and we were spoiled in the first round. I mean, five game sevens over the course of a weekend, a Saturday, Sunday, we were an overtime away from six game sevens with that Washington-Florida series as well. So I don't think we could ask for much better in round one, and I'm excited for a fresh slate of matchups to get into with you guys here.
Yeah, me too. I went 6 out of 8, and you guys are making me look bad here. So that's pretty good historically compared to some of these crazy years when, you know, sometimes we go sub 500 in the first round. I think that's happened to the best of us. But yeah, we're padding our all-time totals here. You love to see it. So anyway, yeah, the rivalries in the second round here are awesome, right? You got Battle of Florida 2.0. You got Battle of Alberta up north. I mean, that's going to be an amazing series with a lot of physicality. Jake, what are you looking forward to most in the second round as a hockey fan and someone that covers not only fantasy, but also betting religiously?
Yeah, I think if I had a pre-playoff wish list, it was basically checked off completely. Battle of Florida, wanted that in the second round, wanted the Battle of Alberta as well. I think the other two matchups are great. I really wanted to see St. Louis, Colorado. I would have been fine with Minnesota, Colorado as well. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been a fascinating series. And Rangers, Carolina. I think that's a great series as well. So there's none of the four where I'm thinking, oh man, I gotta watch this game or this one's 4 of 4. I think they all have potential to be really good. I'm looking forward to some fast-paced hockey in a couple of these series, Pete. And you know, targeting a couple series specifically in the prop market where I think it's going to be high scoring, where I think you could target guys for shots on goal, assists, goals, things like that. You look at the higher scoring series, I think Tampa Bay and Florida has potential to really open up just because that's how Florida likes to play. And I think St. Louis and Colorado also has that sort of potential to really open up and be one of those higher scoring series where I think you could really target the prop market. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most in those two series specifically.
I want to get to Edmonton, guys. I do truly feel like we're waiting for that signature moment for Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think we're seeing it. He has 14 points in 7 games. Having said that, Pete, I do not like the opponent. I think there's obviously some untapped value with Calgary. They're an excellent team. Full credit to Dallas. Like, I'm dedicating this podcast to Jake Oettinger. I couldn't believe the Flames outshot Dallas by 131 in the series, pushed it to the brink, to the limit, game seven, and Johnny Ham and Cheese wins it. But talk me into picking Edmonton, one of you. Pete, we'll start with you.
Well, I mean, I didn't like what I saw from Calgary offensively in that series, and they really struggled to put away a team that I think we could all agree was pretty mediocre, was probably the worst team in the entire playoff field. But, you know, Dallas played into their style, and Oettinger had the series of his life, and hopefully we see more of that from Oettinger. I mean, we did our keeper rankings. I think he was the number two goalie behind Spencer Knight in keeper leagues, 25 and under. So really bright future for Oettinger, like you said. But yeah, I mean, if McDavid continues to score at 1.5 or 2 points per game, Calgary is going to have to match that. And I think we saw some holes in their top six, especially from the second line with guys like Toffoli and Mangiapane, right, Jake? Like, they were a little inconsistent in that series. They're going to have to bring more because, remember, it's a two-headed monster. It's McDavid on one line, and when they do play Draisaitl on another line, they got a big advantage up the middle compared to Calgary.
Yeah, I think you make some good points there, Pete. I was very disappointed with Calgary for most of that series as well. I know Ottinger was so good, and there was games that he really stole for Dallas or kept them in it. But at the same time, there were also games where I thought Calgary's offense looked pretty anemic, and they really couldn't get anything going. And there were games where even the top line got shut down. And like you mentioned, lines 2, 3, and 4, there really wasn't much there for the Flames. So maybe it was just getting past that first round hump, getting through Ottinger. Maybe he was in their heads a little bit. And now facing a team like Edmonton that they seem pretty comfortable playing, I think is going to help them. So I'm certainly on the Flames in this one. But Nick, if I'm selling you on the Oilers, it's just flat out Connor McDavid. Like, you saw what he did in game number 7 and how they used him in game 7. What did he play, like 28, 29 minutes? And they just rode him like a horse in game number 7, and it worked. So I think if you get into a potential where it's a really close series and you get one of those games, the Oilers have that potential to just throw 97 over the boards for basically half the game. And I think that's a formula for winning. And I think he showed us, he really stepped up in a big moment in game 7. So I'm not ruling the Oilers out whatsoever, but I will be on the Flames for this series.
Couple X factors for sure. Evander Kane, number 2 is the goaltending, right? I have no clue what I'm going to get from Mike Smith. For the most part, Jacob Markstrom, yeah. And the other thing, Pete, is the power play. And you can have this theme grow throughout these 4 series in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Oilers in the first round, 7 for 18. Calgary 2 for 24. So if the Flames want to win that series, they have to be at least close in that battle, no?
Yeah, I think there's a chance that these power plays could open up a little bit. Obviously, Calgary has a huge advantage in net. Like you were saying with Mike Smith, it's kind of weird, right? He had 2 shutouts in that series. No other goalie did that in the whole playoffs so far. He even got a little greedy and went for the goalie goal at the very end of game 7. That was insane. He almost got it. He was, what, like 15 feet away or something? But anyway, yeah, Mike Smith, I don't quite trust him in the playoffs. I mean, even when you look big picture, Mike Smith hadn't previously won a playoff series since 2012 with the Coyotes, literally a decade ago. And, you know, he only did it against a team, even with his great points in the series, like, he only did it against a team, Jake, that was missing Drew Doughty and missing Victor Arvidsson for the entire series.
Yeah, and I like the Kings a lot this year, but I like them a lot less going into the playoffs when they didn't have Doughty. And then we get the news about Arvidsson to start the first round as well. So I actually thought the Kings put forth a pretty admirable effort in that series, but ultimately the Oilers' talent just showed up. And Nick mentioned Evander Kane as well. Like, what a pickup for the Oilers this year. I really think you could say that that's part of the reason why they've turned this thing around. And there was a point where it looked like they weren't even going to make the playoffs, and they bring him in. He starts to score. He gives them just a little bit more in that top 6, a net front presence that they didn't really have. Like, you can look at Zach Hyman as a guy that goes to the net, but he is not nearly the size of Evander Kane, and Kane is just so tough to move there. So that's going to be a fun matchup, I think, to watch in this series, is how the Flames are able to handle Evander Kane, because I don't think the Kings had any answer for him in front of the net.
Well, that's a thing too, guys, is I think Evander Kane is like the prototypical guy that you want against Calgary, like Zach Hyman along those same lines. You need to go to Grindtown. Like, you know, Calgary's going to bring it. And I think that's the best thing about the Calgary Flames. And I know Dallas gave them problems, but they can win multiple ways. And I think we will see that in this battle of Alberta against Edmonton, where they can play that high scoring style with you, Pete, but they can also play that defensive style that Rick Bonus almost got the upper hand in that series. But I think that's what makes a team like Calgary so difficult, you know, to plan against.
And I think we look at Edmonton a little bit more favorably than we did at the start of the playoffs after what we've seen from them. You know, there were highs and certainly lows in that series. There were some ugly games. They lost game 5 at home to the Kings. But when you look at the season series and really the past few years, this is one of the best rivalries in all of hockey. And they played the Flames well. Like, the score line was 17-16 and 2 wins for each side in the 4 matchups in the regular season between the Flames and the Oilers. So it's almost one of those things where, like, if it was Edmonton playing Colorado, you'd say, all right, this is the end of their season upcoming. Mm-hmm. But they actually might get up for this series and make it very, very interesting when you factor in some of those past regular season, like, run-ins that these guys have had with each other, and now Kane in the mix as well. Like, that could be a really big storyline and something that I think favors Edmonton more than it favors Calgary, the fact that these two teams are playing each other.
I think everyone's going to remember too that crazy Saturday night game between Edmonton and Calgary, and how many goals were scored, and the fact that the Flames ended up running away with that. And it's hard to forget that game because it was so entertaining for a regular season game, but it feels like it's a different Oilers team now. It feels like something has clicked later in the season for them and into the playoffs. So I think it's going to be a long series. I do. I don't think this one's going to be over quickly on either side. And I think the Oilers are certainly going to be heard from in this. Ultimately, I just think what Pete said, the Flames can win in many different ways. If it gets to one of those higher scoring games, I think they're comfortable playing like that. If it is a 2-0, 2-1 type game, they're perfectly comfortable playing that way as well. So I just think from that aspect, it benefits the Flames. They have so many different outs in this series.
The first time since 1991, we'll get the Battle of Alberta in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Wow. Producer Bob was 47 years of age. I was two in 1991. Guys, I'm so torn about the other Western Conference series as well, Pete, as Bob just frowns in dismay. St. Louis, you know how I felt about that team, guys, all season long. I've been riding them since like October or November. It's going to be a tough matchup. I'm predicting a high-scoring series. A couple things. The power play again, Pete, is a big story. These two teams combined for 15 power play goals in round one. And I want to get to the old rest versus rust debate. We talked about that last week. But Pete, first off, your thoughts, and we'll go around the horn here on this series, because I'm really, really torn. Like, I really, really like Colorado this season, even though I've been pimping the Blues all year long.
I like Colorado's top players considerably more than I like St. Louis's top players, but I actually like St. Louis's depth scoring a little bit more than Colorado's. I think like the third line on the Blues is one of the best third lines in the league. And it, of course, overpowered the Minnesota Wild, another three strong line team, and made pretty quick work of them. I thought that series would go seven, and it went in six with a whimper for Minnesota. So yeah, I think St. Louis is going to make this series a lot closer than it was last year when it was a four-game sweep and they really had no match against Colorado. I think this series will go at least six. I'm picking the Avalanche because I've been on them all year long, and I trust their top guys a lot more, Jake. But St. Louis is a feisty team, a team that I tend to pick against, not because I don't like them, just because I don't like their defense as much as the championship year and stuff like that. And I don't trust Jordan Binnington, big picture, but still, like, this team's not going to go away quietly, and they might give Colorado a scare here.
This is a series for, I want to say, like 2 or 3 months. I've been pumped for the potential of this happening when you watch how the bracket's playing out. And I think we all knew Colorado was going to win that division. And it looked for a while like it was going to be St. Louis and Minnesota in that 2-3 spot. And I thought, man, whoever wins that St. Louis-Minnesota series, that second round series, is going to be so fun. So ultimately, the Blues get it done. The Wild don't get it done in the first round. And I think I'm going to have to just stick with the Blues here. And I was very shocked, actually, at the series price that opened up for this one. Now, we all know the Avs are going to be favorites. Yeah, there we go. We got an underdog already here. But I think we all knew the Avs were going to be favorites in this series, right? Like, what was the number going to be? When I saw them open up at minus 400, I thought that just seems a little bit too steep. And, you know, what if Colorado wins game one? They're obviously big favorites for that game. So I'll let it play out. I'll let Colorado win game one if they do. And then you're going to get an even bigger number on St. Louis. I just think it's going to be a longer series. I have total respect for what the Avs do, and we know how good of a team they are. But it's what Pete said. The Blues are really deep. I like a lot of what they have. If I do have any questions, it does come in goal. If Binnington starts to struggle a little bit, do they maybe go back to Villehusso? So I have some question marks in that category, but I like the makeup of this Blues team. And at that kind of price, I think I'm willing to take a shot on St. Louis to see if they can pull off the upset.
Yeah, I think this is a chance. It's kind of like the type of number that we saw last year when Vegas played Montreal, right? And but this is a much better team than Montreal was, I think, and in many different areas, except for the goaltending. And I think it's very likely that Colorado would trip up against a team like this, like one of the only teams out there that would be deeper than them. Like, I look at the whole bracket and they might have a pretty, there's never an easy road for a team to win the cup, but there's no Vegas. A couple other teams have bowed out already. I was worried about Colorado if they were going to play Minnesota, but they can't take St. Louis lightly. This could be a very tight series. And I agree. The number's like way blown out of proportion a little bit in terms of how big of an underdog St. Louis is here.
Yeah, it's the first thing I saw, guys, when I looked before we started this podcast today was a number. And I'm like, come on, the Blues had 9 different 20 goal scorers. They're a legit team. They just beat a legit team, in the Minnesota Wild, who potentially could have gone all the way. And you're opening up at that number. But, you know, I just wonder, if game one could be the game, Jake, to jump on St. Louis because of the rest versus rust factor, right?
Yeah.
8 days off between games for Colorado. I think there's a bit of value there in general. I think when you look at the Blues moving forward.
No, that's a good point, because we always talk about that this time of year, right? There's usually one or two teams that moves on quicker in the first round than anybody else. And this year, there's really only one. Like, Colorado got that series done, then everybody else continues to play. So I tend to think that there is a bit of that rust factor, that you sit for like a week, just over a week, and then you got to play a team that's coming in with a bit more form. That could be a good spot to fade them. And just quickly too on St. Louis, like, we talk about the depth that they have, and I know you guys follow it very closely at the end of the season into fantasy playoffs. Like, the horses for the Blues were that Thomas, Buchnevich, Tarasenko line, and that line never really got going in that series against the Wild. Eventually they got broken up, and we didn't really see Robert Thomas have a major impact on the series offensively. Tarasenko did start to score some goals, but I think that just speaks to the depth of the Blues, that those guys weren't really there, nowhere to be found like they were in the second half of the season. And guys like Perron and O'Reilly and Kyrou were there to step up. So I just think they have so many names that can beat you, that if Colorado is able to match up against one of those lines and slow them down, I'm pretty confident that they have parts that can beat them. So I think I'm with you on that for game one, Nick. It might be a nice time to try to attack St. Louis and see if you can catch Colorado a bit sleepy on home ice.
And Nick, I know you've been on the Blues for a while now, and clearly you're defending them for good reason with that big number we talked about, but are you concerned about Torrey Krug's injury and how it might affect this series? Because, you know, I know St. Louis's depth on defense looked really good. Even a guy like Perunovic stepped in and had three assists in three games. The rookie with a very high upside moving forward in the years to come. But I think that, like, Colorado's blue line is on another level. So if Krug even misses a game or two, that might be a big disadvantage for the Blues.
Yeah, there has to be concern, right? Especially, I just talked about the power play and how pivotal that's going to be for both sides. And both were really, really effective in the first round. You take Torrey Krug off the power play, it's not the same look. With all due respect to Nick Leddy, of course, Scott Perunovic as well is a rookie. So yeah, certainly. And I think in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I love it for a variety of reasons, but it always seems to be guys who step up. Like, even for the Blues, you know, Jake, you talk about some of the depth pieces. And I do like this Blues team in terms of depth scoring more than the team that won the Stanley Cup. And they had Alex Steen on their fourth line. But you look at a guy like David Perron, who's a seasoned vet, like Brandon Saad's another guy who can break through. There's so many different weapons. And I think ultimately it will come down to that matchup, whose depth can outscore the other team's depth. But I think certainly that's a storyline. You take Torrey Krug guys out of that lineup, it's not the same St. Louis team. But again, he's been missing for a good chunk of this season, hasn't he, Jake?
Well, and I already like St. Louis going in, like you did, Nick, to this playoffs. And they're a team that I'm holding a cup future on. So I'm obviously rooting for them to continue this run. But watching playoff Ryan O'Reilly show up, I think, has been a huge thing for me, right? Like, you guys both followed it throughout the course of the regular season. It was a disappointing year for Ryan O'Reilly. He didn't really get it done offensively. If you had him on a fantasy roster, it was a bit of a frustrating season. He's got a Conn Smythe trophy on his shelf already. Like, this is a guy that's going to step up come playoff time, and watching him get into form and just play a totally different style over that six game series with Minnesota, I think sells me even more on the Blues down the middle of the ice with O'Reilly. If he's capable of playing those 20, 21, 22 minutes and chipping in offensively like he was in that series against Minnesota, I just think that makes the Blues such a dangerous animal. So I know we're praising them here a little bit. There's obviously a huge animal on the other side of this fight in Colorado, but I think everybody knows what Colorado is going to bring to the table. MacKinnon, Rantanen, Nichushkin, all of these top end players. And we all saw what Cale Makar did in the first round too, just smashing records from the back end. So there's a lot of great pieces obviously on the Colorado side, but I'm pretty comfortable saying St. Louis is going to make a series of this and match up fine against them.
And we've talked about it all season long. We've made reference to the fact that Kadri, if he doesn't get suspended or injured or something, really could put this team over the top. Again, good to see Darcy Kemper probably going to be ready for the start of the series after that scare. There's Bowen Byram, there's Eric Johnson in terms of other guys that did not play last year for the Avs in the second round when they fell apart against Vegas. So again, those are things to remember. That's why Colorado is such a heavy favorite. I mean, the books have been on that team for a few years now. This is still a relatively favorable matchup considering they last year played Vegas in the second round. But again, they slipped up the previous year in the second round too, right? When they played the Dallas Stars, and we thought that they were a little you know, a little bit of a pushover that year. They were not expected to go to the cup final that year or anything close to it. And then one other guy for the St. Louis Blues to keep an eye on, Ivan Barbashev, a little quiet in the first round, but had 60 points in the regular season. So that really just shows, like, right, a couple of those guys, Nick and Jake, were like third or fourth liners, like Robert Thomas and Kyrou and Barbashev during the season that they won the cup. So now it's kind of coming of age and see what these guys can do in bigger roles as a bigger part of the team.
The Blues have like six Nick Pauls. Let's put it that way.
Right. Yeah.
You need these guys this time of year. We'll get to Tampa momentarily. They're just always guys who seem to step up. And again, you know, Jake, against a team like Colorado, you need these guys to produce. Like you would think that, you know, you're going to hold their guys in check, but it's going to be a run and gun type series. The bottom six needs to elevate. And I think that's where St. Louis's depth can really, really stand out. And I was sort of mystified to find out or remember, guys, that it's been 20 years since Colorado was in a conference final. Like you start thinking about how mighty and strong this team has been for years. And I sort of couldn't believe that it's been 20 years, guys.
You have to feel like it's only a matter of time, whether it happens this year, you know, beating St. Louis. And obviously the odds makers are thinking that they do so with that minus 400 price. If it doesn't happen this year, you just have to think it's going to happen over the next couple of years. This team is totally built for success. And, you know, you mentioned St. Louis and we talk about this depth and how spread out things are. I think it makes them always, and this goes back to the start of the regular season, a difficult team to target in the prop market because you don't know who's going to step up for St. Louis on a nightly basis. Now, the Perrons and the O'Reillys and the Kyrous were the guys that I was really attacking in the first round, but things could change. Do we go back to Buchnevich and Thomas and Tarasenko and those guys? So I think I'd keep an eye on that early in the series, how they're spreading out the minutes, how they're using these guys for St. Louis. And, you know, the prop targets on Colorado, I think, speak for themselves. We know the top guys are there. They're going to be carrying the mail.
I was loving the Ryan O'Reilly shot prop in the first round. So maybe you look at that. Ever since his mom appeared on TV on Mother's Day, the guy just started ripping it up. What a gamer Ryan O'Reilly is. And that's a revenge series. Don't forget that. Former Colorado Avalanche. Okay, guys, let's go to the Eastern Conference. The Battle of Florida. I sent out one of my many troll tweets on Sunday night. The Battle of Florida, better than the Battle of Alberta. I've been waiting all season long. In fact, I tweeted about this series 5 months ago to troll everybody. Well, it happened. So we're getting it again. Pete, let's start with you. How stunned were you that Florida, A, went to six games and B, did not score a power play goal in that series against Washington? Because I could not believe it.
Yeah, that's something that needs to change going up against Tampa, right? I think Washington being without Tom Wilson, that's a wonder that they took that series to six games. And it was even closer than that, really, right? If that series could have gone seven, the Capitals gave an A-plus effort, better than we all expected. And I think Florida showed some of its flaws a little bit. Like, I'm not super confident in them. Even if Braden Point is injured in this series, like, you know that Tampa Bay, whether they have Point or not, if you give them two or three power play opportunities in a game, they're going to score at least one or two almost every single time. So that could be an advantage right there, even if we're looking at Florida as the favorite that they are and one of the best teams on paper that we've ever seen offensively. You can't count out the Lightning. And Jake, the revenge tour, not the revenge tour, the underdog tour for the Tampa Bay Lightning back-to-back champions continues here because they're underdogs once again against the team that they beat in the playoffs last year.
Look, outside of that putrid power play that you guys talked about for Florida, which was disappointing. I mean, outside the fact that you could win a series in six games and not score a power play goal, I think speaks to how good they were in other departments of the game. So, yeah, clearly you want to fix that. You're not going to beat Tampa Bay going 0-for on the power play. You're going to need to capitalize on those chances because, you know, the Bolts are going to score some power play goals throughout the course of the series. But I was actually impressed by the way Florida handled themselves in those last few games. And I think a lot of us, when we were picking this series, really underestimated what Washington was. Like, I think a lot of people looked at them as sort of like a Dallas or a Nashville, like an eight seed just getting into the playoffs. They were a 100-point team this year, and they've got a lot of playoff experience and veterans on their team. So I'm not shocked that Washington gave them a bit of a series, and I think that was kind of the perfect challenge for Florida, that speed bump to get through, and they faced some adversity. Like, they had to score a goal late in the game to send it to overtime and win, and they fell down 3-0, and they came back, and they won that game, and they score in overtime to win a series. So those were the kind of boxes boxes I wanted to see checked off for Florida in the first round. Like, can you score in those clutch pressure playoff moments? Because I had my questions about how it would translate over from the regular season, a team that just dominated and got fat on 3-on-3 overtime. I'm like, well, we don't play 3-on-3 overtime in the playoffs, but I actually thought Florida proved a lot to me over those last few games coming through in clutch moments.
Building blocks, right, guys? Like, it had been 26 years, Pete, since winning a playoff series. Check mark number one. Got to ask you guys, though, like, are you sprinkling a bit on a Carter Verhaeghe, Conn Smythe future? Because you talk about depth, you can't look past Florida. And what a first round he had, not to mention a revenge series against Tampa, Petey.
Right. Yeah, that's where he kind of burst onto the scene a little bit. And then the following year went to the Panthers and broke out playing with Barkov. So, yeah, he's been an amazing story in the playoffs with 2 points per game, you know, close to McDavid among the league leaderboard with 12 and six games. Insane. Nobody could have seen that coming. And yeah, when you look at Verhaeghe's career trajectory, he was part of the Islanders organization. He was from Toronto and was drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs. So another one that got away for the Maple Leafs to get to see another one of their former players, you know, go to the second round before any of them do. So yeah, crazy stuff. But yeah, Carter Verhaeghe, I don't think he's going to win the Conn Smythe. I think there are about five different guys that would win it over him, you know, just because of name value and stuff like that. I loved what I saw from Claude Giroux in the first round. Obviously, Barkov and Huberdeau are two of the top 10 players in the game. Aaron Ekblad is a big difference maker and X factor, Jake, because he was maybe the biggest reason they didn't take down the Bolts in the first round last year when he missed the entire series with injury, right? And now he's going to be playing in this series, hopefully. And that's something, the second that series ended last year, I remember me and Nick and a lot of other people talking about it, Jake. We were like, you know, we can't wait until this matchup happens again with Aaron Ekblad to see if it could put the Panthers over the top.
Yeah, that's a great point to bring up and a piece that they were clearly missing last year. And not only do they have Aaron Ekblad back and playing well, he looked good in the first round, he looked healthy. They've got other pieces on the back end that they've added and shored up since last season. So this is a better Panthers team. I think we can agree on that. Whether they win or lose the series, we can agree or disagree. And you know, I'm sure some people are going to pick Tampa, some are going to pick Florida, but this is clearly a better Panthers team than it was last season. They've made those improvements. And I think it was huge for them to get over some of those humps in the first round that I mentioned. Like, we talk about teams with these first round demons and haven't make it out of the first round. Florida's not nearly in the category of some of these other teams like the Leafs and everything that they've been dealing with, but they're a team that still had to prove it to me. And I think to a lot of other people come playoff time, it's one thing to run through the regular season and score all these goals. It's another thing to beat a team like Washington with that sort of veteran experience that they have. So I liked what I saw from Florida. I think this is going to be a really long, really fun series. And I went into it thinking Tampa's winning this. Like, whoever wins Tampa Toronto is going to win this series. But I'm worried that maybe Tampa's a little bit gassed from what they had to go through with the Leafs. And now the Braden Point injury. What do you guys think about that, Nick? Are you worried about that Point injury? Is that factoring into your pick here at all?
It is. And I will say, history does tell us when Florida, you know, does win a series, they go to the Stanley Cup final, right? Because it had been 26 years. But yeah, like, that's my wonder, because right away that series ends, I'm like, okay, I like Tampa. But then you subtract Braden Point, you add Aaron Ekblad. Obviously, Vasilevskiy's the better goalie. I start to lean Florida Panthers a bit more. Not to disclose my pick just yet. We'll do that at the end. But I start to lean Florida a bit more, which is difficult because, again, Tampa's won back-to-back Stanley Cups, but that did not look good at all for Braden Point. The fact that he didn't even go get treatment. He just sat on the bench the rest of the game. The way he yelled, true gamer to skate off, even to take a shift there in the second period, but that did not look good. Pete, you subtract Braden Point from that Tampa roster, that's a tough loss, and I think it's an undervalued loss at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had Tampa going back to the finals at the beginning of the season, and then I felt a little better about it, you know, going into the playoffs, how they played at the end of the season. And then obviously they, you know, the Maple Leafs deserved to win that series in six games, but it didn't happen because of Vasilevskiy, what he did in the third period and overtime in game six. And then on the road in game seven was good enough once again with only one goal allowed. So, you know, I think Vasilevskiy is one of the top Conn Smythe candidates until somebody slays that team. Florida might be one of the most likely teams in the whole league to actually put them away. I think the only teams that are putting away Colorado in, you know, 6 or 7 games, because that's what it will take, would be either the Avalanche or the Florida Panthers putting away Tampa Bay. So yeah, that's what I'm looking at here. They have an actual chance to do it, but until somebody actually does it, it's very tough to pick against the Lightning. And if you're looking at it from a betting angle and you see like plus 120, I mean, how many more times could somebody put the Lightning as the underdogs here when they're just so tough to finish off?
It's pretty hard to ignore Tampa as the underdog in this series. I was really curious what kind of price we would get. I assumed Florida would be the favorite just because they have home ice advantage, and that's going to count for something, at least when the series starts. But as we know, these things, these series prices flip based on what happens in the early games. So you see Tampa at plus money now. That might not last. If they get a lead in this series, then we're going to see it flip over to Florida for plus money. So I'm drawn to Tampa just because of that number, but I have my concerns and a couple of things that you guys said, right? Like we talk about the Braden Point injury. Pete, you mentioned the fact that this team was one goal away from losing in Game 6 to the Maple Leafs. If the Leafs can score on a couple of those chances, they lose that series. But on the other side, you could say the same thing about Florida. If Washington scores a couple goals in overtime, or they can close out a 3-0 lead, maybe we're talking about the Capitals getting through. So both of these teams, I think, had some issues in the first round, but ultimately they were able to overcome them. And I'm still leaning towards Tampa, despite the fact I do have my concerns about what they had to go through in the first round and losing Braden Point as well.
I know I'm flip-flopping back and forth, but we're seeing greatness right now, guys. Like talking with a lot of Leafs fans this weekend after that loss, like Andrei Vasilevsky, I don't think it's been spoken about enough how great this guy truly is. His closeout ability, right? Elimination games, he shut down. Games after a loss, he shut down. And that's my wonder in that series too. Sergei Bobrovsky, you know, I was stunned. We talked about how many goalies we'd see, Jake, in the first round in the tee-up. Addition to this podcast going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. We had the number of 23.5. It hit 28. I thought Spencer Knight was going to be one of those goalies. He wasn't. So we saw Sergei Bobrovsky all series long. I just think that coupled with the power play, Tampa was 7-for-33, Florida 0-for-18. It has me swaying a bit more to Tampa now, guys.
Yeah. Well, and the Tampa power play at times can just look automatic. Like they keep it so simple. They move it around the outside. They get a little traffic in front and they take a shot. And like, you know, some teams, and you know, maybe Florida falls into this category. I'm not going to tell them how to work their power play.
You should.
Clearly they, maybe I should. It wouldn't hurt at this point, right? You haven't scored a goal yet. So maybe they should take some suggestions, but Tampa just keeps it simple. Obviously they had the 5-on-3 against the Leafs in Game 6, which you would expect them to score on in a key situation, but you still have to bear down. You still have to come through in a clutch moment. So I just like Tampa's power play a lot. And I'm very confident the fact that they're going to score some goals on it throughout the course of the series. But I do think that Florida is going to figure it out. Sometimes with these power play struggles, and it's not coming at a great time for them. You don't want to be struggling on the power play in the playoffs. It's a little bit different in the regular season. Sometimes all it takes is one. You get a bounce, it bounces to somebody in front of the net, you score, and all of a sudden the power play feels confident again. So I'm not overly concerned about it or going to read too much into it. But to me, it was pretty shocking the fact that you're able to win a series in 6 games without scoring a power play goal. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, and they won that series despite one of their more valuable players only having 1 point in 6 games, Anton Lindell. That was a guy in the regular season that if you looked whole body of work this season, you would have said Florida's third line with Marchman and Lindell and Reinhart is head and shoulders better than Tampa's third line in the regular season, especially after the guys they lost compared to the previous 2 years when they won the cup, like Gaudreau and Coleman and Gord, I'm talking about. But again, in the first round, we saw big performances from Ross Colton. Hagel was getting good chances. He missed that wide open net that one time. And then Nick Paul was the story of Game 7 with 2 goals. So I know Marchman's banged up right now. Start with Nick. What do you think is the X factor in this series? Is it the third line of Tampa, or do you think it's like Lindell bouncing back here? Because he was one of the best rookies at even strength in the whole league in the regular season.
Yeah, quite frankly, I think it could be that. And on top of that, like Anthony Duclair was really, really quiet. He was a guy I was trying to rip him a couple times in terms of anytime goals, and it just didn't hit. But I think you talk about depth, and I think there's clearly more with Florida. I think if there's the one thing you can take away from this Tampa team this year, They don't have the same depth, but these guys, again, they always just seem to score when it matters. Like Ross Colton, Nick Paul was phenomenal. Like there's some people scratching their heads when they picked up Nick Paul, they picked up Brandon Hagel. But Jake, it just seems like everybody that Tampa acquires turns to gold. And, you know, it was the same old story for them in the first round against Toronto, wasn't it?
Well, they did look more beatable, I thought, in this first round than they have in the previous eight playoff series that they've won, which is just an insane number. Now we're up to nine straight playoff series wins for the Tampa Bay Lightning. But watching the series, and maybe that's more to do with Toronto than it is to do with Tampa. Maybe the Leafs are just a really good team, and they obviously had a great regular season, and they gave Tampa, I thought they gave Tampa the best series that anybody's given them over the last few playoff runs. I know the Islanders took them to seven, but it always felt like Tampa was in control of that series. So again, trying to figure out if that's more Tampa kind of taking a step back, or if it was just they went up against a really good team in Toronto and they passed through it. So that's a little bit of a concern for me because they didn't look quite as dominant, but we probably should have expected that based on the players that they lost after last season. And I think they've done a pretty good job bringing in pieces. You guys mentioned Paul, Brandon Hagel, a player I really liked on Chicago all season. And I thought he was probably one of their best players outside of the obvious guys up top, like a Patrick Kane. Bringing him in, I think that's a nice little piece that can work in the playoffs for them. So I'm still comfortable with where Tampa's at in their game. But I did see a couple holes that maybe Florida could exploit in the first round.
Last but not least, fellas, the Anthony DeAngelo revenge series. I can't wait to see the reception. By the way, what a call by Sam Rose in game seven. Oh, our Timmy so Panarin good. In overtime, and the New York Rangers are off to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Two things that come to mind right away, Pete, as we break down this series. The discrepancy in power play. Carolina had 36 opportunities in the first round. They were 5-36. The Rangers 6-19. This is going to be a hell of a series. I'm probably leaning a bit towards Carolina, but the Rangers really, really impressed me with the way they battled back there in the first round, Pete.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Rangers took a lot of resiliency to put together what they did against the Penguins, especially with Pittsburgh getting some of their key pieces back in game seven, like Crosby and Jarry and Raquel. I mean, the game seven victory is that was the real deal in terms of how it got there with what happened in game five and what turned the tide of the series. That is up for debate. It certainly did turn the tide of the series, right? Crosby doesn't leave that game. The Penguins probably don't lose it. And we're talking in a much different tune about the New York Rangers. I think that Gallant was outcoached in that series for the most part. I think that Shesterkin in many of those games was outplayed by a third string goalie. So if I was super high on Boston and I was thoroughly impressed by the Hurricanes, how can I not pick the Hurricanes against the New York Rangers here? I actually think it's a little lopsided. And if you go back to 2020, when these teams played each other in that little short first round, I mean, that was domination, right? In terms of like puck possession and everything like that, Jake. So you look at these metrics too, right? The puck possession stuff is way in the corner of the Hurricanes compared to the Rangers, compared to the regular season and also the playoffs so far.
This is probably the series I feel the most confident in picking, which could be dangerous. So maybe you do want to load up on the Rangers, but I like the Canes here. I think that this team is built to win. It feels like over the last few years, eventually they're going to go on this run to the Stanley Cup final. And maybe this is the year. I mean, Boston obviously gave them everything they could handle in that first round series. And it became sort of that homer series where the home team wins every single game. But I don't know. It felt like Carolina was comfortable playing like that. Like, okay, you can take your home games. We're just going to win in Carolina with the Caniacs going wild. And that crowd was absolutely insane. That's one thing that is going to be really fun in this game is those Carolina crowds, which are great. And we know the MSG crowd is so, so loud. So I'm looking forward to that aspect of this thing, but I'm going with the Canes. Bob looks like he wants to jump in here though.
This is my favorite on the board. I like the Hurricanes. However, Shesterkin is going to have to play like Jake Ottinger did for them to beat Carolina. I just think Carolina, as Jake said, has been building towards this moment. They felt comfortable in that game seven at home against Boston, who has been their nemesis. And I just think when I watch it on the ice, again, if Carolina and is Freddie Anderson going to play, who knows, you know, if it's going to be him or Ranta. But when you just watch the play on the ice, as Pete said, how could I take the New York Rangers in this series? I think Carolina could win it in five. How about that? Ooh.
Shesterkin looked human too, guys. Did he not? Like, he looked pretty human in that first round series.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Raanta, right, Bob? I mean, Ranta's a big storyline here. He was great in the first round, Nick. And that's another revenge angle. You talked about Tony D. There's Raanta, who started his career with the Rangers behind Henrik Lundqvist. And Brady Shea is another one. Jesper Foss, Derek Stepan.
It's a lot.
This is a big connection of former Rangers on this Hurricanes team. And I'm sure that Raanta and D'Angelo especially have some serious extra motivation facing their former team.
I would love to see video tributes in the Stanley Cup playoffs on both sides of the spectrum. That'd be incredible. But yeah, that's one of the things, guys, I'm looking at in terms of a matchup perspective in this series is the battle of the number ones, if you will, in terms of power play quarterbacks. Adam Fox on one side, 7 points. Tony D'Angelo, I thought, was tremendous and probably putting over Carolina in that first round series against Boston. If there's one thing D'Angelo can do, Jake, it's provide offense. And I think kind of that was something that was missing from the arsenal of the Carolina Hurricanes. So you add him to the mix, it just shows you the depth this team has, especially on the back end.
I think he was the perfect fit for Carolina, and Carolina was the perfect fit for him. It just ended up being the perfect match because they have their horses on the back end that can lock it down, that can play that defensive style. We know all the parts that they have. They were sort of just missing that power play quarterback, that offensive-minded defenseman, and Tony D'Angelo has been that guy. And you know, despite all of his troubles and everything off of the ice and everything, the baggage that comes with him, his play on the ice was never the issue, right? The issues with him always came off of the ice. So I think he looked at this as a bit of a redemption chance. Like, okay, like I kind of screwed up. I got another chance here with a really good team, a cup contending team. I better run with it. And I think he's done that so far. So I just love the Canes top to bottom. They're a really tricky team in the prop market to target just because they are so deep. Like, it doesn't always come from Aho and Svechnikov and Jarvis, that top line. A lot of times it comes from the second line. It comes from Prince Trocheck. We saw in Game 7, it comes from Max Domi. Like, Max Domi steps up all of a sudden and has a huge Game 7. So they're a tricky team to bet on when you're looking at shots on goal or assists or goals, just because it's so spread out and so many different guys can step up. But from the Rangers side of the ledger, I think you know who you're looking at there. And we saw their big stars step up in the last couple of games because Zibanejad was awesome in those last two games. And the bread man, Artemi Panarin, sending everybody home with that OT winner.
Yeah. And I think for the Rangers to make this series closer than I think it will go, because I agree with Bob. Like, I could see Hurricanes in 5 easily, and the Game 5 being in Raleigh, and that's that, right? But if the New York Rangers have a third line producing, like we saw at different points in the series with Lafreniere, Kako, and Filip Hedl, then maybe we're talking here about how the Rangers could get into this series. Again, they're not going to have home ice advantage. I don't know if they're going to win Game 1 or 2. Are they capable of it? But maybe, but Shesterkin would probably have to steal it with like a 40 plus save game. So let's say they're down 2-0 going back to MSG, not to be grim, but they're going to need these third liners to really show up and be more consistent than they've ever been in their careers. And what do you think, Jake? You think that they're capable of something like this, that kid line?
I have my questions about it against Carolina. I think it's different. I hope to see it because it's nice to see these kids take a step and get this kind of playoff experience. But I just think Carolina is going to be a bit of a different animal. And at times, for honestly, most of the series, Pittsburgh was taking it to the Rangers. So I think it's what you said, Pete. I do think it's going to have to be an Igor Shesterkin game to go into Carolina. And we might see a similar series that Carolina played in Round 1. Like, we'll win our home games. We know we've got home ice advantage. If we can steal one in New York, so be it. Then we'll make it a quick series. So I think they're comfortable playing a series like this, and they know they've got that great home ice advantage. And I could see this playing out very similar, being a bit of a homer series where the Canes take care of their games and the Rangers take care of their games at MSG.
Yeah, don't forget. I mean, the Rangers had their issues for the better part of that series scoring 5-on-5. And I think special teams will be a factor moving forward. And I do feel the same way. Like, I think Pittsburgh really, really dissected them, and everything changed when Casey DeSmith left that series. Louis Domingue came in. They got a win, but like, it just wasn't the same team. Then Crosby goes down. And again, we're not making excuses. Like, full kudos to the New York Rangers for finding their way. They found a way in Game 7 in OT, Artemi Panarin. But I just think Carolina is a bit of a different animal. So with that in mind, guys, and Jake, since we had you on here, we'll let you go first. Do you have your picks, your round 2 picks locked in here?
Yeah, I'm going to roll with Carolina. Let's let's give the Rangers an extra game. I'm not going to go full five like Bob said, but I do think that there is potential. I'll give them six. I'll say Canes in six there. I like Tampa Bay in a series that I feel like is going to go the distance. So I guess that means they're going to have to win it in Florida, but I'm going to go Tampa. Got to mix in an upset. I'm going to continue to roll with the Blues. I know it might not be the most popular pick, but St. Louis in six for me. And the Battle of Alberta, I'm going to go Flames in seven. That thing goes the distance. We see a nice long series. I think the Oilers are going to show up. They've impressed me a lot more over the second half of the season than they did early on. But ultimately, I just think Calgary is going to be too much for them. And the sea of red is going to be going wild for another game seven win. Maybe another Johnny Ham and Cheese winner.
What's this contract going to look like, man? I don't know how they're going to re-sign that guy, Pete.
Hey, I mean, at least it didn't end right then and there, right? Then that would, now they could actually maybe do something good, something they haven't done since, what, 04, getting to the finals. Yeah. It's certainly possible with that system. And that's going to be the theme in some of my picks. Like, I love the system in Calgary. I trust it more than Edmonton. Yeah. You know, I think Edmonton wins that series maybe two times out of 10. I think Calgary is going to probably take command at some point in that series, even if it gets emotional and physical and stuff like that. I think the calmer, cooler heads will prevail in Calgary. I'm going with Carolina. Again, they eliminated a team that I was very high on in Boston. They neutralized a lot of their depth scoring. Their power play, Boston, was neutralized in the road game. So that's not good news for the New York Rangers. Like, one of the other big things about the Rangers is that they're a great team on the power play. They saw it right in overtime. Like, that was a great play by Miller that drew the penalty. And then they scored that goal on the power play. So you're not going to score very many power play goals against the Hurricanes, one of the best PKs in the league. So that's going to be a different animal for the Rangers again. So I'm going Carolina. I'm sticking with my pick of Tampa Bay. I don't feel great about it. I think that Florida wins this series more times than not, especially this year with the rosters and the shape that they're in. But I still think there's that, you know, heart of a lion championship caliber group in Tampa that could certainly take down a team that they're very familiar with. And then Colorado, I think in six games, is my other pick. So yeah, I'll stick with the three teams that I picked to go to the Final Four originally, in Colorado, Calgary, and Tampa Bay.
Yeah, clearly I was torn throughout this podcast, but I've come to a final decision. It's going to be boring. It's going to be boring. Drum roll, please. No, I like Tampa, just the heart of the champion factor. I do not believe in Sergei Bobrovsky. You guys know that. Give me Andre Vasilevsky every day of the week, twice on Sunday. I like Carolina. I love the Blues. Don't get me wrong, man, but I just think this is different. This is a different Colorado team, and I think they're going all the way this year. And the Battle of Alberta is going to be really, really close because Connor McDavid's on a different planet right now. He's outside of Pluto, if you can be. But I think that series goes seven games, and I think the Flames find a way. So those are my final four: Tampa, Carolina, Colorado, Calgary. Bobby, you want to give us your picks? You're too scared.
I got
to
the
do
same
that.
As you, Nick. I'd like to disagree with you, but I have the same as you. I see Colorado rolling over St. Louis. Calgary, again, just a better put together team than Edmonton. And I know McDavid's great, but I can't take Edmonton with Mike Smith. I just can't do it. And I'll take Daryl Sutter any day over the week over, you know, Ray Croft or whoever the coach is in Edmonton.
Ray Croft.
What's his name?
Woodcroft. Jay Woodcroft. Yeah.
Yeah. Woodcroft. There you go. And then Roddy B with Carolina. And then, listen, Tampa, I'll take Tampa because of the goaltending. That's
big
that's
coach guy over here, right?
You guys left me on Blues Island over here. I'm on an island.
I do like the number on the Blues.
Me too. Yeah.
I your logic and your reasoning there is sound, and one that the listener should consider very much. If we had Michael Lieboff on, I think he'd be saying the same things that Jake is saying about the Blues.
It's probably a big number for a reason. One thing I wanted to leave you guys with too, when we're looking at that Florida Tampa series, I'm curious if we see it start similar to the Leafs Tampa series, where the Leafs just jumped the Lightning in that game one, and Tampa just wasn't really ready for the series, it felt like. Yeah, it's not a crazy quick turnaround from Saturday to Tuesday, but it's only a couple days off. Florida's got that extra day. They're at home. I could see the Panthers jumping the Lightning in that series. So if you are looking to grab Tampa, if you want to stay patient or maybe make half the bet now, save half of your bet for after game one, I think I could see Florida taking game one and maybe getting a better number on the Lightning.
And again, we don't know as of record time. We'll talk later in the week, but we don't know if Braden Point is going to play in this series. If Braden Point is ruled out for the whole series, then I might, you know, change my pick a little bit. But again, I think that, you know, Tampa Bay and Florida is probably going seven games. And it's going to take a lot to finish off the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Bobby, I wanted to remind you, I know that you've been, you know, not anti Mike Smith, but you're just a little bit of a doubter, but Edmonton does have your boy, Cody Ceci, who had six points in seven games in the first round. My goodness. I mean, hey, how's Calgary's defense going to keep up with that guy?
And the big goal for Ceci. I almost texted you guys. If I wasn't down and out with the COVID-19, I would have texted you guys on the Ceci goal. But Jake, what a pleasure. Thanks for spending so much time with us. That's almost an hour of your time. You could bill Nick Alberga for your time on this.
Please
one.
Do.
Thank you, Jake.
I will be next time we hit the town. I'll be it'll be on Alberga's tab. So thanks for having me, boys. It's always great chatting, especially playoff time.
Definitely go out there and follow our boy Jake Hahn at jhahn4 SiriusXM Mayo Media Network. Does a great job in the regular season and playoffs covering fantasy and betting for them. So hey, Nick, I mean Conn Smythe candidates right now. I mentioned Vasilevsky. We mentioned like guys that have been long shots that are kind of, you know, coming up a little bit, up and coming with Verhaeghe and maybe Evander Kane. Personally, if Edmonton goes to the finals, like McDavid's going to win it. So there's an inroads with that. But are you seeing anybody else out there that catches your eye for the playoff MVP after one round?
You know, it's funny, like Carolina wins the first round, but is there really anybody who stood out as their front runner right now? Like maybe Anthony DeAngelo. Like I think there's a lot more to be written with that story. I think it's quite definitive in both our eyes. You look at Colorado, it's likely a two-horse race, right? Like Nathan McKinnon, ridiculous. You know, Makar, ridiculous in the first round. So those are probably the two guys I would look at in terms of futures. Obviously, there's not much value because I think going into the Stanley Cup playoffs, McKinnon, you know, had the best odds, obviously, of winning the Conn Smythe. Makar was probably like top five. But that's the way I see it. Like, I think even with Tampa, there's a lot of dust to unsettle there. Like Vasilevsky would be in the conversation. And I think you'll start to see with Florida, you know, some of their bigger boys start to show up. Like Barkov was really good in the first round and Huberto and guys like that.
Definitely. I mean, there's some great defensemen. We mentioned, you know, Hedman in years past. He won it once before, right? It was Hedman who won the Conn Smythe the first year and then Vasilevsky the second year. Jacob Slavin is one guy. If Carolina went the distance and if he scored something like better than a point per game as a defenseman, because it's so wide open, who the heck knows? But yeah, 8 points in seven games for Slavin, and he's a great playoff producer over the years. Kills it in game sevens as well. So wanted to give him a shout out. Again, I think it'll probably be Sebastian Aho if the Canes win the cup. And also, like, how about Mikko Rantanen's career playoff track record? And we never talk about him for Conn Smythe, but he would probably never win it, right? Because of McKinnon and Makar, like you said. But again, like only a few players in NHL history have put up better playoff points per game than Mikko Rantanen, last I checked, Nick.
Yeah, a tremendous player. And again, it just speaks you to the depth. But again, if Colorado's going all the way, it's not going to be because of Rantanen, if you know what I'm saying, Bob.
Now, you guys are missing the name that is
let's hear
clear cut.
Is it a coach?
The initials are J-O. Jake Ottinger has a real shot.
So we you know what got me about
that
whole thing?
I loved it last night. Everyone's like, oh, Jake Ottinger, you know, Conn Smythe, you know. I mean, yeah, if he won and then he kept going and going and going, he was unbelievable. But yeah, go put a bet on Jake Ottinger today.
Well, I was going to say, like, if had you listened to the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast all season long, you would probably know who Jake Ottinger was going into the playoffs, right? Because we pimped this guy all year long, and it's not like this is new information to us.
You guys are early on. We're on Pete, especially early on talking about Jake Ottinger. I was rolling my eyes over here, 23-year-old in the AHL. What are we doing talking about this guy? Okay, boys, a couple news and notes across the bulletin as we were recording with Jake. Number one, something with the Islanders. Number two, something with Vegas, Peter.
Yeah. So Lane Lambert, the guy that has been coaching behind Barry Trotz for many years with the Capitals and the Islanders. So he's the new head coach for New York. I think that's actually a nice move for New York. I don't know if they were going to get any better from somebody outside. You know, there are so many retreads out there. I've always been excited to see Lambert eventually become an NHL coach. So I think I feel a little bit better, Nick, about the Islanders. And then out west, Pete DeBoer reportedly out in Vegas. I mean, does that mean that they could be in on Barry Trotz here? What do you think?
Yeah, I think another team that the GM should have taken the fall, but it's the head coach takes the fall because that's how the NHL world works, with all due respect. I don't know what Pete DeBoer was supposed to do with half his roster injured, but so be it. So he's out in Vegas. I'm right there with you on Lane Lambert. I think anytime somebody gets an opportunity who has never got one before, I love the story. I think he inherits a pretty damn good team, and it just makes me wonder a bit more what happened, what transpired behind the scenes with Barry Trotz that you're now giving it to his assistant. But I love these type of stories, Pete. I can't go wrong with them.
Well, that kind of plays into what Bobby was saying on the previous show when we were reacting, right? Like, Trotz only had one more year on his contract. Maybe he was losing the room a little bit. And you keep it in-house. You keep the trademark system, maybe with a couple of tweaks. Maybe he'll play, you know, Barzal with Wahlstrom a little bit more, and we could see some more of that untapped offensive appeal. So you never know. And then, yeah, out in Vegas, I mean, that team with the new coach, whether it's Trotz or someone else in a fully healthy roster, they could easily go from non-playoff team to top five cup contender for next year. So the window has not closed on Vegas. And like you said, Nick, they're not a bad team. They were just missing an ungodly amount of players on their roster.
And you know, Barry, if he wants to coach, he's going to a ready-made team. He's not doing the old rebuild. And, you know,
he's
Detroit. I'll steal the words from Dan Rosen. He's going to a ready-made team, ready to win a Stanley Cup. It's not breaking news or, you know, a shock to think that. So if Vegas is interested, I mean, talk about landing on your feet, right? You win a Stanley Cup with the Capitals. Then you get thrown into Long Island. Beautiful place to live, right? You got Lou Lamoriello as the GM. And then you leave Long Island, and you're going to land on your feet wherever you go with a ready-made club. And if it's Vegas, I mean, there's worse places to be than Las Vegas. All right, Nick, let's put a bow on this one though, boys.
Yeah. And I want to remind you guys, like, I've been playing a lot of the Stanley Couple, which has been phenomenal stuff. Pete, I know you have as well. And I can't wait for round two here, fellas.
Nick, I'm actually undefeated in the Stanley Couple. Okay. My Wordle record is not as clean as my Stanley Couple record, but just take a look at the record books. All right. Undefeated. I don't know about you, Peter, but the listeners, go check it out at stanleycouple.nhl.com. It's a fun little game. It definitely gets your brain going. And if you're a hockey fan, you're going to love it.
Yeah. I mean, I got a lot on my plate every day between working and watching my son, who's 2 years old. And of course, staying up until 1 a.m. to watch these Calgary Dallas overtime games. But I'm making room for NHL Stanley Couple, no doubt about it. It's presented by Upper Deck. UpperDeckEPAC.com lets you buy, open, and collect your favorite hockey cards from anywhere at any time. Get a free pack just for logging on. Visit UpperDeckEPAC.com today.
Very nice, boys. Well, nice little nice little round two preview, and I guess we'll talk to everyone on Thursday as these series get underway. Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll have some storylines obviously developing, and we'll be here to chat about it. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think. Hit us up on Twitter. Do all that. And Peter, say goodbye.
Yep, looking forward to it. Check out fantasy playoff pool rankings updated on nhl.com/fantasy. We also got a sleeper for each team in the second round, and the second round begins Tuesday. So again, for Jay Kahn, we appreciate him joining us. Bob Bender, Nick Alberga, Pete Jensen saying so long, and we'll talk to you later in the week. NHL Fantasy on Ice.